I am really delighted to have joining us today Rabbi David Rosen, the Director of Interreligious Affairs at the American Jewish Committee. Rabbi Rosen, thank you as always for joining us here on 101.9 Chai FM.
Pleasure, and best wishes from Bruce.
Rabbi, I saw an incredible article, I think it was in the JTA, possibly about a week ago now. It spoke about you being the first Israeli rabbi to be hosted by the King of Saudi Arabia, and more than that, being hosted at the palace. Wow. Talk to us about that.
It was an amazing event. But I suppose I need to give you a little bit of background.
Please.
The previous king, King Abdullah bin Abdulaziz, was the one who started moving Saudi Arabia, albeit cautiously, but moving it in what you might call a direction of modernization and opening up. And he initiated a major interfaith charm offensive, if you like, and brought the Muslim world together in Mecca in 2008. And then he had a meeting with the Pope, the first ever Saudi king to visit the Vatican, and to gain the support of other religions to establish a center, which was eventually set up in Vienna together with the governments of Austria, Spain, and the Vatican.
Okay.
And even though it's an intergovernmental organization, its board of directors are made up from representatives of five world religions: Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. And I'm the Jew on that board. And that was rather remarkable for the Saudis to agree for an Israeli rabbi to have been on that board in the first place.
Absolutely.
And our board has met over the course of the year since the center was established in 2012, mainly in Vienna, but also in Madrid and also in Rome. But this was the first time that we had been invited by Saudi Arabia to meet in Riyadh, in the capital of Saudi Arabia. And that itself was remarkable because they never ever invited an interfaith group of any kind before as an official guest of the Saudi government. But I didn't realize until we had arrived there that we were actually going to be hosted and meet with the king himself. And of course, we were photographed and it was in the media in that regard. And the significance of the fact the first time ever interfaith, first time ever a rabbi had been there, and it was an Israeli rabbi, obviously made the headlines. And it was indeed quite an exciting event.
Rabbi, did they know that you were an Israeli? I mean, is it a publicly known fact?
Well, public is another question. Obviously, all the people that were involved in this initiative knew and know. And the media also presented me as such, but the media that reported on it probably wasn't the local Saudi media. It was in the Arab press. But I have a certain profile, if you like, in the field of interfaith relations. And it's probably not too much of an exaggeration to say there are very few rabbis, if any, that are better known within the Arab world. So my identity as an Israeli is well known.
What kind of puzzled me, and I must say I found it quite amusing, was apparently you were quite hungry on the trip.
No, actually I wasn't hungry. I was a little bit, overfed with only one item in particular, and that's were dates. And you know, you have 12 different kinds of dates in Saudi Arabia.
No, I didn't, but I'm sure you do.
So I can live quite happily on fruits and vegetables, but I was date saturated.
I'd find that kind of strange. I mean, you're talking interfaith. You're talking a certain sensitization to other people's religions. I mean, why wouldn't they have accommodated kashrut for you?
Well, the truth is in the Gulf and in interfaith events that I've attended in Abu Dhabi and in Dubai, they have had because they have a little Jewish community there. But you've got to bear in mind that there are no Jews in Saudi Arabia. And their assumption is, okay, you don't eat our meat, you'll eat our other stuff. And from my point of view, anyway, probably the organizers know that I'm a vegan and know that I'm perfectly happy with more fruits and vegetables.
So
I don't think anybody was too concerned.
Okay. I'm interested in the political changes that led to the fact that it was acceptable to have you there. Is this a cozying up to the Americans, or is there something deeper than this and a real warming of relationships between, I don't know, Israel and Saudi Arabia?
Well, they're not all unrelated, but as I said, this is actually a continuation of a process that started already about 8 years ago. And 8 or 10 years ago. And their interest in interfaith relations and in reaching out to the Jewish community as well are all the factors of their understanding that they have to do something about their image, especially after September the 11th, 2001.
Sure.
That there, we live in a world where it's not just hard power, but soft power. And you have to know how to win friends and influence people. That interfaith activity is an area reaching out, which is really low cost and not a dangerous area like direct political or diplomatic overtures. But in addition to all those factors, and I have been used, if you like, as a kind of a back channel in certain ways, but in addition to all those factors is a genuine desire of the Saudi leadership to change their society, recognizing if they don't change, they're going to be left behind and completely wiped and washed away. So there have been a number of different initiatives. For example, the previous king poured in millions of dollars into providing scholarships for tens of thousands of Saudi students to study abroad in Western universities. And then now, with the present regime, there's been a much more significant move to greater liberalization within Saudi society, especially with regards to the status and powers and opportunities for women.
For women.
So a year ago, or let's say 2 years ago, I would definitely not have been invited. This is definitely a sign of a change in terms of approach. And what's really interesting, when we met the king had this narrative that he communicated to us, obviously in Arabic, but there was a translator there. Okay. He said, Islam is an open, embracing, tolerant religion, and that is the way we were. Politics forced us to become insular, isolationist, and even extreme, wow. And now we are recapturing the authentic spirit of Islam. Now, of course, we know that's a lot of nonsense, but it doesn't matter. If that's the way he wants to present things, and that's certainly the direction in which he's taking things, to be able to make Saudi Arabia, both internally and perceived externally, as a more tolerant, open society.
I don't think any of us would have expected Wahhabist Islamic regime to have taken as open a stance as the one that you've just described. That really is quite remarkable. Rabbi, I'm sorry for the trivial question, but I'm just fascinated. Were you actually in the palace itself?
Was I actually where?
In the palace itself.
Yes, absolutely. That's what was so significant. Never had the king in the palace ever received an interfaith delegation, let alone a rabbi. And it's quite an experience. It's an amazing, gleaming white complex from the outside and inside, opulent, extravagant furnishings. You go through these corridors and there's a guard. First of all, the Arab guard in traditional dress with daggers. And then after that, there was another guard with swords, another guard with bigger swords. And then we're ushered in and all the process would get in a separate, reception rooms and getting oodles of coffee along the way. And then we come into the king's private chamber where he is sitting together with a foreign minister and we sit down in a prearranged protocol seating and the conversation pursued. And these are, as I mentioned to you, some of the things he said. And obviously Saudi Arabia has still a very long, long way to go before it can be considered an open society. But it's, as Mao Zedong, I believe, said, every 100-mile journey begins with one step. And they're certainly serious about taking those steps. But perhaps I should add, the most exciting thing for me was a meeting we had with young Saudis.
Yes.
We met with about 70 men and women. The men and women sat separately, but they were in the same room. The women were covered up. Some, you could only see their eyes through the slits in their abayas, in their in the costume.
Yes.
And but these were all university graduates, many professionals, doctors and lawyers. Many had studied abroad, all impeccable English. And after they were graduates of the third cohort of a course in intercultural communication, preparing new generations for greater openness. And they were really very impressive young people. The amazing thing is after there'd been a formal presentation and questions and answers, then they gather around us and out comes to me a young woman who I could only see her eyes through this slit that showed her eyes.
Uh-huh.
And she says to me in Hebrew, Shmi Rim. Ani rotza levaker b'Yisrael.
No way.
My name is Reem. I visit Israel. You would have floored me, knocked me down with a feather. It was amazing. So this young woman had taught herself basic Hebrew, and what more could there be of a sign of the times than that?
Rabbi, I need you back. I need to continue this conversation. We've run out of time, but thank you so very much for always agreeing to talk to us here on Chai FM and enlightening us on that really remarkable experience of taking the veil off a country that is so unbelievably mysterious and unknown to all of us. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. All the best.